From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Dr. Daniel Levy from the Framington Heart Study and the Boston University School of Medicine is interviewed by Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling about the identification of a new set of genes associated with blood pressure regulation.
Dr. Daniel Levy is Director of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute's Framingham Heart Study and Professor of Medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. His main areas of interest include the epidemiology and genetics of hypertension, heart disease, and heart failure. Dr. Levy, you were part of an international research team that just reported the discovery of new genetic clues to blood pressure regulation. What was the nature of your discovery?
By putting together a consortium of multiple prospective observational studies, epidemiology studies from the U.S., Iceland, and Rotterdam, six separate studies, we were able to pool our resources and leveraging them to identify gene regions that are associated with blood pressure or with hypertension. And the lessons that we learned from this study were that we were able to identify regions associated with blood pressure, which is something that had resulted in a lot of prior failed efforts, or at least at the very best, only very small degrees of success prior to this effort.
Which specific genes did your team find, and what is the function of each of these genes?
First of all, in terms of function, for some of them, relatively little is known about their function. But in terms of the genes that we found, for systolic blood pressure, we found a gene called ATP2B1, a gene called CYP17A1, a gene called PLEC-HA7, and another called SH2B3. These are genes that many people are not quite familiar with, but increasingly so, a couple of them at least, are rising to the surface. For diastolic blood pressure, there are actually six genes that showed association, and those included ATP2B1, which I mentioned a few moments ago, a gene called CACNB2, another gene region, we're not sure what the actual culprit gene is, that includes a gene called CSK and another called ULK3. SH2B3, once again, which I mentioned a moment ago for systolic pressure, popped up again for diastolic. A region including the genes TBX3 and TBX5, and also a region including the gene ULK4. For hypertension, that gene ATP2B1 that I mentioned popped up once again for hypertension. In terms of what some of these genes actually do, I'll comment on just a few of them. One is ATP2B1, which encodes a plasma membrane calcium calmodulin-dependent ATPase that we know is expressed in the vascular endothelium. This gene is involved in calcium pumping from the cytosol to the extracellular compartment. We know from animal research that it's expressed in aortic smooth muscle cells, and it seems to be overexpressed in spontaneously hypertensive rats. That same locus was suggested as a locus of interest just about a week ago in a study from Korea, looking at blood pressure in a Korean genome-wide association study. Another gene that popped up both with regard to systolic and diastolic blood pressure was the gene SH2B3. We know that this gene is involved in the immune response and that our very top variant in that gene happens to produce a substitution of an amino acid in the protein that's coded. And it's believed that the substitution is likely damaging to the protein's function. That very same SNP, or single nucleotide polymorphism in SH2B3 that we found to be one of our very top findings, has in just recent months been found to be associated with other diseases, including type 1 diabetes, celiac disease, and a high blood eosinophil count. In addition, very recently, that same gene has been found to be associated with myocardial infarction. So very interesting and very different associations of that gene, not only with blood pressure, but with other disease traits as well. The one gene that came out of our study that was not a total surprise, it would have been one of the known potential candidate genes for blood pressure, was the CYP17A1, which encodes 17-alpha-hydroxylase, which is an enzyme that's involved in steroidogenesis, forming steroids that are important in body function. And some of those steroids, when overproduced, can result in high blood pressure. We know that mutations in this particular gene, CYP17A1, are found in patients with congenital adrenal hyperplasia, which can be associated with salt retention, low potassium levels, and high blood pressure. So we believe that, in contrast to those very rare variants that cause adrenal hyperplasia, there may be a more common variant in that same gene that can cause mild degrees of enzyme dysfunction or deficiency that can elevate blood pressure levels. And the last gene that I'll comment on more specifically, CACNB2, encodes a beta-2 subunit of a voltage-gated calcium channel that is expressed in vascular tissues. And we know that other members of this family of genes do have effects on blood pressure regulation and do serve as targets of calcium channel blocking medications, which are useful in the control of blood pressure.
You sort of hinted at this during your last question, but I read that some of these newly discovered genetic variants were unsuspected in relation to blood pressure regulation. How so?
We know a lot about blood pressure and pathways involved in blood pressure regulation, pathways like the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone pathway. None of the genes that emerge from our genome-wide association study involve that key pathway, directly at least. In terms of other pathways that are involved in smooth muscle function, pathways involved in the adrenergic nervous system and adrenergic receptors, pathways involving natriuretic peptides, we had a clue to one gene that was in the natriuretic peptide pathway being of interest here. But most of the genes we would have said before the study began were the primary genes involved in blood pressure regulation. None of those emerged at the very top of our list.
Earlier, you also indicated that previous attempts to identify genes associated with blood pressure have met with limited success. Why was this the case?
There have been a number of prior attempts at genome-wide association studies of blood pressure or hypertension, and to my count, there have been about 7 studies published previously, one as recently as just a week ago. And those studies did not find what we today call genome-wide significant associations with blood pressure. Some of them came very, very close. I think the major obstacle is sample size. We're looking in genome-wide association studies at common variants, and by their very nature, common variants are not likely to have very large effects on blood pressure or on other disease or trait kind of measurements that may have a large impact on health and well-being. So the effect sizes that we tend to see with genome-wide association tend to be relatively small. Because you're looking for relatively small effect sizes, it takes a very large sample size often to find association.
Would you talk a bit about the methodology your team employed, genome-wide association study, to find the genetic variants that you discussed in your journal paper?
Yeah, so each of the 6 studies, a study from Iceland we call the AGES study, a study from the U.S. from several different centers called the ARIC, or Atherosclerosis Risk in Communities study, another large national study called the CHS study, the Cardiovascular Health Study, which is a study of older people, the Framingham Heart Study from Framingham, Massachusetts, and two studies from the Netherlands, the Rotterdam Study, and an extension component of the Rotterdam Study, we called it the Rotterdam Extension Study, were six cohort studies that had been collecting blood pressure data for many years in the study participants. And in addition, these six studies also have collected DNA in their participants. In the last year and a half or so, these six different studies were able to get funding to conduct genome-wide genotyping. Typically, what occurs with genome-wide genotyping is you genotype anywhere from these days about 300,000 to a million individual genetic variants. We call those variants SNPs, or single nucleotide polymorphisms. On average, in our study, there were about a half million SNPs genotyped by each of these six different studies. Because of knowledge gained from the HapMap project, which looked at genetic variation across the genome, we were able to use knowledge about linkage disequilibrium, or the tendency of a particular SNP to predict the identity of other SNPs in its immediate proximity. We then imputed the identities of about 2.5 million HapMap SNPs from roughly the 500,000 SNPs that were genotyped in each study. Each study individually analyzed those 2.5 million SNPs in relation to systolic pressure, diastolic pressure, and hypertension. And we then pooled the aggregate results of each of the six studies and conducted what we call a meta-analysis, a joined analysis of the individual study results from the six cohorts. And we then looked at the top findings and identified which ones met the most stringent criteria for genome-wide significance. In addition, another element of our project was to broker an agreement with another international consortium of just over 30,000 people to exchange our top results for lookup in their study and their top results for lookup in our study. And when all was said and done, each of the two different groups, the two different consortia, ended up with eight genome-wide significant association findings. Interestingly, there was an overlap of three that were the same for the two different consortia, and each consortium had five unique genome-wide findings.
Based on this study, how might your findings be used to develop new ways to treat hypertension?
Well, I could talk about the immediate future and then project into the longer-term future. So right now, the results of our findings can be used to immediately better understand the biology of blood pressure regulation. It implicates genes that we previously didn't know were involved in blood pressure regulation. So step one, advancing knowledge about the biology of blood pressure regulation, which we thought we knew quite a bit about previously. Step two, we appreciate now that blood pressure is a complex trait, and many genes are involved in determining blood pressure levels. We identified in this study eight and the other consortium eight and a total of 13 new genes involved. These 13 new genes that are involved are no doubt only a very small subset of all the genes involved in blood pressure regulation. We believe that in the intermediate range, it may be possible to devise genetic risk scores that allow us to identify people at high risk for the development of high blood pressure early on, and identify them as people who should have their blood pressure checked more frequently, and people who perhaps should be treated a little bit more aggressively because of the likelihood that their blood pressure will continue to rise over time. Again, not ready for implementation today, but certainly using genetic information to target high-risk individuals early on before complications due to hypertension have developed. And the last and by no means the least important, involves the development of new drugs. Understanding genes involved in blood pressure regulation that previously were unappreciated may allow for the development of new treatments, and the possibility exists that we may someday have targeted treatments for hypertension based on someone's particular genetic predisposition.
Now, based on the results of this study, what are the next steps you and your research team have planned to follow up and sort of elaborate on these results, which we've just been discussing?
Yeah, we will be looking at other blood pressure-related traits that have been collected in these studies. For example, what we call the pulse pressure, which is the difference between the systolic and the diastolic pressure. We'll be looking at what we call mean arterial pressure, which is more or less the average pressure in the course of the entire cardiac cycle. Those are two things we'll be looking at. Our studies also have long-term blood pressure measures, and that's another thing we plan to look at, long-term blood pressure. And in addition, we hope to be able to look at things like age and sex interactions, because there may be different mixtures of genes that play a role in young people versus older people, or in men versus women.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.